And we're back. Welcome to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. Put on your favorite mask and gather up your girlfriends because we're going on a heist. This is the Mike, Mike, and Oscar, Oscar sprint profile of the Steve McQueen movie Widows, the Viola Davis picture, of course. A lot of hype from us about this movie, a lot of hype from me specifically. I was very excited for this. Didn't understand why people were saying before having seen it that this, quote, wasn't an Oscars movie. I am co-host Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
You're upset right now.
Not
you're upset. Your opening analogy made no sense. Take your girlfriends on a heist. That doesn't make any sense. Your face doesn't make any sense to me. Your criticisms of Viola in the pre-production meeting here are upsetting because you're just lashing out.
I'm not happy.
You're not happy. It's like you're the Little League teammate of mine. You just struck out for the 17th time in a row. This was me in real life.
I've been betrayed by one I loved.
I had this friend who struck out 17 times in a row. You see in Little League. You seem very, very upset.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled. We'll get into it. More will come out in spoilers, but this is the Oscar sprint profile of Widows, the 2018 movie by Steve McQueen. If you're not joining us before for an Oscar sprint profile, if you do not know what Mike, Mike, and Oscar does here with an OSP, what we do is take would-be, should-be, and will-be Oscar contenders. We put them through what we call our Oscar sprint profile format. Why is it an Oscar sprint? Because we think the year-long marathon-type run that these movies have to do to make it to the Oscars performance gets intense at this point, and everyone's sprinting up to the finish line, and so we call them Oscar sprint profiles.
We're always just sprinting. That's just us.
Heart rate is constant.
Cynthia Erivo, she'll go for the jog, even though she's got a sprinter's physique.
She had great form too.
She had great form. She ran it. She was awesome. She went on a full sprint.
We give you two reviews for the price of one. We give you the non-spoiler review. That's the first half of the movie. Then we're going to get this big spoiler music dance breakdown. If you haven't heard that yet, you're in for a treat. Second half will be all spoilers. So don't worry if you do not want to hear spoilers. This first half is for you. This is our non-spoiler review, and usually we start with cast and crew from Mike.
Yes, co-written and directed by Steve McQueen of Hunger, Shame, 12 Years a Slave, and, of course, our new 6 Degrees of MMO.
That's right. That's his biggest starring role yet.
But, the great thing about his career, Michael, is that McQueen gets all kinds of reps making short films in between the McQueen features.
I see what you did.
26 of those, including a Kanye West music video, to be exact, on his IMDb profile there. That's just what he lists. So this man is experimenting constantly. He's making movies constantly. He only has 4 feature films, but the rest are being put out there as shorts. So,
yeah, also not bad when one of your 4 feature films is 12 Years a Slave either.
True. McQueen won an Oscar as a producer of the Best Picture winner, 12 Years a Slave. He was also nominated that year as its director. He's won 2 BAFTAs, for one for 12 Years and one for Hunger. He's one of our best living filmmakers at the moment. I mean, he's been on a streak. He's 4 for 4.
High profile. People were very excited for this one as well. Seemed like a loaded cast. And if any heist movie was going to break that glass ceiling of not being an Oscars movie, this seemed to have all the makings of.
Continuing to form a super team, novelist turned screenwriter Gillian Flynn also gets a screenplay credit here. Gone Girl, Dark Places, Sharp Objects are the 3 stories she's written for both mediums. For her next 2 projects, we have this, Widows, and then 9 episodes of Utopia, which is coming to Amazon Prime. That's a batshit premise about a graphic novel kind of like coming to life. I read it fast, but there's a bizarre premise. Amazon Prime's going to have a Gillian Flynn TV series.
Gillian Flynn's been all hits, too. She knows how to adapt these things, and they've been cult classics, if nothing else, and usually critical smashes like this one seems to be as well.
The 3 novels I love. Dark Places did not make a great movie. Sharp Objects was surprisingly a similar pacing to this film, and I did not expect that going in. I did not expect a slow-paced Widows, and yet we got something very much like Sharp Objects in a way. Now, you're a little upset with the creative choices of Viola Davis, which is like, I could see the pain on your face.
Well, you know, I'm not she is by far not my biggest complaint about this. I'll say that
True.
At the start. But yeah.
And I kind of agree with you because I don't understand her character as well. But it pains me to look at your face when Viola Davis is not your hero in this world.
I'm just so, I had such high hopes for this. I'm just so.
Like
just,
the kid with the bad haircut.
I just want to go cry for a while. I don't want to talk to anyone. I was wrong. I was wrong.
Which are you more upset about?
That
movie? So Viola Davis plays Veronica. She's known from TV series How to Get Away with Murder and American Coco as
an American treasure.
Viola Davis' filmography includes highlights such as Fences, Suicide Squad, Get On Up, Ender's Game, Prisoners, The Help, Eat, Pray, Love, Doubt, and Far From Heaven. She's won an Oscar for Fences and two other nominations for The Help and Doubt. She also has 4 Emmy noms, 3 for How to Get Away with Murder and 1 for her 1-episode arc on Scandal.
Yeah, she, like I said, she's been a hit in everything she's done. Even her performance in Suicide Squad, her performance was decent.
Right.
You know?
That's some bad dialogue to elevate.
Yeah.
Some people elevate bad dialogue in this. Some people don't. We cannot consider the title of this film, Widows, as a spoiler, correct?
No. The Widows. It's the all Widows. Over the marketing.
So, Taken's Liam Neeson. The Punisher's John Bernthal. Goliath's Manuel Garcia Rolfo. And Coburn Ross are the dead husbands who make this title possible. We then have those widows, the rest of the widows. Michelle Rodriguez from the Fast and the Furious franchise plays Linda. Elizabeth Debicki from The Tale and the Cloverfield Paradox of this past year plays Alice. We have Cynthia Erivo from Bad Times at the El Royale. God damn, was she good in that. She plays Belle. We have Gone Girl, TV's Fargo, and The Leftovers star Carrie Coon playing Amanda. And Tom Hagen himself, Robert Duvall, as Tom Mulligan.
Yeah, taking the racist role and turning it up to a 12.
His son Jack Mulligan is played by Colin Farrell. And we also get Atlanta's Brian Tyree Henry as Jamal Manning, Get Out's Daniel Kaluuya as Jatem Manning, and Animal Kingdom and Silver Linings Playbook actress Oscar nominee Jackie Weaver as Elizabeth Debicki's mother in this. Widows also stars Garrett Dillahunt, Alejandro Verdin, Bailey Reese Walters, Molly Kuntz, Eric C. Lynch, Michael Harney, Brian King, Ann Mitchell, and MMO favorite or not, Lucas Haas.
How does this miss? Look at this cast, this setup, this budget, this director. I don't know how this can miss. And that's why I was on record for it and hyping it up so much. Wanted it to be an Oscar movie.
I'm going to start to tease my review a little bit. I still like this movie. I did not hate it. I did not have a microphone saying that this was going to be the best movie of the year, even though you kind of went there with it, and you're upset at this point. I totally hear you. I've been there before with movies that I just wanted to love so hard.
Yeah, and it totally bought me hook, line, and sinker, too, because I thought the opening was great, but we'll get into it.
I'm just going to intermittently try and pat you on the back of the head throughout this production.
Need a lollipop or something.
Just trying to perk you up. You need ice cream there, pal?
17 strikeouts. Shoes.
Wow, that's an obscure Family Guy quote. Yeah, sure is that what that is?
Let's go take a dump in Mother Maggie's shoes.
Oh, my God. That's from the Brian and Stewie episode where Brian is taking Stewie on a road trip to go see, like, the Barney the...
Mother Maggie's Farm or whatever
it's like a
it's
Barney
called.
The Dinosaur kind of TV show. And Stewie is very upset that
his
it's all
fake. Dreams
fake.
Are crushed, not unlike mine.
That's very, wow. Your brain, I'm trying to talk you through things here, but sometimes I worry about your brain right here. That makes some sense.
I'm just going to start cutting myself.
And it's also
in the second half
sadly comedic.
Yeah, well, such
just
is life.
Just like the opening of this episode. Yeah. So the movie, The Widows, is based on a 1983 TV series of the same name. This was news to me when I read
I wasn't aware of that either.
Profile. Apparently, it was a Steve McQueen passion project. He loved the TV show as a kid, which he says during the PSA at the beginning of this film.
When did this start happening, by the way? We have little director soliloquies to the audience at the beginning of every film now. They happen in The Incredibles 2 as well. I've seen it a couple times.
You gotta like it, Mike, because now you've heard some, you know, off the cuff remarks from the director going in.
Yes. Is that what they're doing? They're trying to make it personable?
They're trying to sell it. I mean, we just did the Stan Lee tribute where Stan Lee was doing all those sections, all the credits and the letters and all the things reaching out to the audience.
Yeah, all right. I'm not crazy about it, I'll be honest.
I think I'm a little mixed, but it was kind of funny to see Steve McQueen, you know, make a little joke at the beginning of it. That's all I'm saying. It's okay for me. All right. We usually get movies expanded into TV shows. At least that's what my brain was telling me usually happens. And Miami Vice is like is few and far between. But then I looked up at an actual list, and here it is, Michael. 21 Jump Street, Charlie's Angels, Mission Impossible, Get Smart, SpongeBob SquarePants, Superman, Star Trek, The A-Team, The Untouchable, Starsky and Hutch, Adam's Family, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Wayne's World, Jackass, Serenity, Scooby-Doo, The Twilight Zone, Dragnet, and The Brady Bunch.
So these are all TV shows that eventually became movie properties.
Eventually became movies.
Say it's probably closer to 50-50 than you'd think.
Now, we don't usually get, really, any of those are Oscar movies. So maybe The Untouchables was nominated for something, maybe. So this is a potential Oscar contender, as many people have said, and as our Oscar lens will prove. And it's a rarity, I guess.
Yeah, it's, well, that's also why it was up against it from the get-go. And like we commented on, there are so many people that was sight unseen saying, oh, it's just a shame that Widows isn't an Oscar movie. It's not an Oscar-type movie because we have these television adaptations in the history. They have these heist movies and the success or lack thereof that they have with the Oscars and the Academy. So there's really, there was a heavy precedent that this was battling against.
Right.
And that's why I am as upset as I am, because I was on record saying it's Steve McQueen. It's this cast. Look at this source that they have. Look at the time this is being made in. It's a very feministic time and they're having their comeuppance. Why wouldn't this shatter the glass ceiling as well? And that's part of my disappointment, because again, you're going to hear me say this doesn't feel like an Oscars movie. The lack of success and the legacy that these kind of properties leave, I don't think it's going to be bucked by this one.
Yeah, preach. I kind of agree with you. And, you know, I'll quibble a little bit because I like this movie more at the end of the day. But I'm not going to proclaim it as much of an Oscar film either, unfortunately. And that is something we are disappointed about. Like, we went in kind of thinking it was going to be The Town, but everything's super polished,
right?
Everything just on an Oscar level Steve McQueen movie. And we still kind of got a lot of those heist movie, those action movie performances that are kind of over the top and in your face. And a lot of those things weren't fixed to elevate the genre as much as I wanted to, for
seeing
sure.
A MacGyver episode for a couple hours is something.
Yeah,
you know?
This felt to me like kind of a TV show at times as well.
I absolutely agree.
Anyway, the last production note here is that this film was announced in 2015. Davis was attached in 2016. They began shooting in Chicago May of 2017.
And this was a Chicago movie. They make a point to bring that up a couple times. That's another one of the of-the-moment issues that they try to touch on, the violence and the gun violence in Chicago and how easy it is to get firearms. We're going to get into all the issues that they tried to touch on and some of the problems with, but here's some specs. For Widows, Steve McQueen is the director. He also has a screenplay by credit along with Gillian Flynn. Mike told you that already. Linda LaPlante has the based-on novel by. This film debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival September 8th of this year. Went wide in the UK on November 6th. And November 16th, that is today we are recording this, you'll probably hear this on the 17th, is when this went wide in the U.S. Obviously, it had its preview showing on the 15th last night. It's an R rating on a 129-minute runtime. It has a listed budget on Wikipedia, which I'm very surprised to see, but maybe they thought, since the early critic scores did fare fairly well, it's okay to release it. $42 million right now. It has a almost $4 million rake just internationally, and we'll talk about some of the projections. Box office projections, according to Box Office Mojo and the Hollywood Reporter, have it making $12 to $18 million in this, its debut domestic weekend. Again, partially due to the draw of the critical numbers. It carries an 87 Metascore right now.
Mm-hmm.
Really high.
Really high.
7.5 out of 10 IMDb score on 3,300 votes. Relatively high. Rotten Tomatoes stands at a 92% as of this recording on 200 reviews.
Really high.
8.3 out of 10 average critic score. 183 fresh out of 200 reviews, like I said. 78% audience score. Wow. Still fairly high. 3.8 out of 5 average audience score. Over 1,000 reviews there. So people like this movie. It does have a draw, and it does have that critical reception, as well as hopefully that box office reception that's going to keep it afloat. $18 million is probably going to be somewhere, finish around, what, $50, $60 million total rake, maybe, domestically?
Yeah, that makes sense. Those numbers will be not good at the end of the day.
Yeah, not going to be enough to probably put it in the black. So some of the only award that it has right now to its name is a nominee at the Toronto International Film Festival for the People's Choice Award, the gala presentation. Steve McQueen got a nomination, did not win that award. Other than that, it's going to wait to see if it has any more in the run-up, as the next couple weeks should be big for those precursor award shows as well. So we're going to see what happens there. Again, for us, probably not going to win much, we don't think, but we'll get to the Oscar lens in a moment.
It's on the rise, actually. I mean, we have some of our friends on other podcasts that are really hyping it, and it is on the rise for sure. Let's get you acclimated here to the premise. Set in contemporary Chicago amid a time of turmoil, four women with nothing in common except the debt left behind by their dead husbands' criminal activities take fate into their own hands and conspire to forge a future on their own terms. We love the trailers.
Yeah, the marketing of this was sold well. You had Viola Davis in that mask holding the gun to the guard's head, and you see it is her after a while. That was like one of the lasting images that we saw. It was awesome. The husbands were in this very criminal enterprise, and they were leaving the bag. Their wives have to pick up the slack, and yeah, it was all there for us, and the bones of this story are really great, and that's kind of why my expectations were so high.
Now, I did have a quibble going in throughout the previews that we've done, is that, like, I didn't understand how, like, a teacher and all these civilians were
on that for a while.
Jump in and be able to do this, and I wanted that to be something that they thoroughly explained, and I didn't get that either, really.
No, you did not.
And that upset me, but I was with you, I think. I wanted this to be kind of an elevated version of the genre, to say it again.
I thought it was going to be.
I wanted Ben Affleck's The Town or Gone Girl and just done at a prestige level with a Best Picture winning auteur behind it with Oscar winning thespians playing in it. And this production design, oh my God.
This is going to temper my expectations going forward for any film that you think, how
this could changed
it fail?
Your movie watching experience it might have, forever.
It might have, honestly. Like, how could this fail? How could you do this?
I don't think it failed. Let me just say that. I enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed the plot twist.
Is this going to be nominated for Best Picture?
This should not be nominated for Best Picture.
It failed. All right? This was supposed to be the Best Picture nominee. It wasn't supposed to win.
You're a Yankee fan, by the way.
It was supposed to break that ceiling. It's supposed to be me thumbing my nose at everyone for having its back. It let me down.
This was championship or bust for you.
Yes.
And you had, you know, great odds when you bet on this going into it all. No, I feel your pain. I'm upset for you. And I
owe a lot of money
you.
To some bad people.
As did the characters in this movie, which played out fairly well. I just, the biggest surprise and the biggest thing I want to tell audiences going into this is, in my opinion, I wasn't prepared for the pacing of this movie. This is a slow pace. This is a methodically paced film. The story unravels in a way that I did not expect. I figured it would just be an action plot, an action movie plot,
see,
a heist movie plot, and we did not get that.
I was expecting a slower pace because I thought in order for it to be considered an Oscar contender, it was going to have to be heavy on the drama. For it to be heavy on the drama, it had to be a little slower. And seeing these scores, having them spend so high going in, I thought, oh, that's exactly what we're going to get. We're going to get this intense, dramatic, character-driven story.
And you're not wrong. We got that. It was intense. It was dramatic. I just didn't expect. I expected more formulaic because I heard that this was commercially a very successful movie for the critics. Like the critics were predicting this was going to be a big hit with audiences because it was so commercial. But I think of a commercial heist movie, I think of a totally different plot line than what we get here. Like this is a character study of three characters. It is not an Ocean's 11, you know, heist movie or even, you know, The Town, for instance. I mentioned it before. It was a couple different heists. So we didn't get that at all. This is a movie with just a valley of drama. And some of it's up, some of it's down for me. But between two good scenes, the two crazy scenes, and that's where I'm at with it. But I kind of like the way some of it unfolds. I do enjoy Gillian Flynn as a writer. I mean, it's not her source material.
No, it's not. I think that actually does matter as far as her adaptation. But I don't hate it. Like it's a worthwhile movie. It's entertaining. I'm just very let down by the fact that I was carrying the cross for it and really want. I thought this was going to be one of my favorite movies of the year. I thought this was going to be one of the best movies of the year.
I have this written down. Selfishly, I wanted this movie to be one of my favorite movies of the year. I wanted this movie to work so badly. I had to ask Mike if he just read my copy by accident or whatever. Sometimes
no,
we do
that. That's how I felt.
But I agree. We both felt the same way. I wrote that down beforehand. So I'm with you. This is, to me, it's not just not a Best Picture nominee. It's getting elevated in the buzz with this Oscar lens. So you ready for this, Mike?
Yeah. I don't even know what to feel anymore, to be honest, because I'm going to get mad if a lot of people have it as an Oscar movie now.
Well, I mean, it's still on the outside looking in. Best Picture, it's in the possibilities category on Feinberg. Widows is 12th on award circuit for Best Picture, and 13 out of 30 critics, experts on Gold Derby, have it up for Best Picture in their top 10s. It's not a shoo-in.
Yeah, it's tough to begrudge anyone saying it's a top 10 right now. It's not in my top 10 right now, but I was also probably more let down than any human on earth by this movie.
You have a bias that is playing out before our ears.
Yes, I will admit that. We're supposed to be objective and non-biased. That's not the case.
Best director now. I mean, I thought as a composition, this film still kind of works. I mean, let's put it this way. Playing the orchestra of all the production values that we're going to get into down the line here, Michael, McQueen does a good job. He doesn't make a lousy melodrama.
No, he doesn't
do that.
I think, well, we could argue about melodrama now that I know what it means.
There's some bad dialogue.
I think this is most betrayed by its script, is what I'm going to argue. Okay. I think McQueen did a fine enough job. I don't think it's award contending. But I think this is the big betrayal is going to be from the script, so I'm interested to
see. There's a lot of ambition with some of the shots in here.
Like a lot of, yeah.
He made a trademark shot at the beginning of this movie that I thought was like, I can't believe he's doing this, but he did, and we'll talk about it in spoilers, and it's very showy, let's just say. Possibility on Feinberg for Steve McQueen, 15th on award circuit, one expert on Gold Derby.
Sounds about right.
So he's really not in the conversation as a main contender, outside looking in. Best actress, Viola Davis, major threats category on Feinberg forecast, 9th on award circuit, 15 out of 29 Gold Derby, with one first place, so... There's critics out there that love her. I've seen a lot of top threes in the Gold Derby references there. So about half the experts, the major pundits cited on Gold Derby really like her performance here. And this is a loaded year for Best Actress.
That's interesting. That's curious. I think her performance was good. I mean, Viola Davis is always going to give you a good performance. I wouldn't call it great. I think her performance this is tough to say because obviously she won the Oscar, but her performance in Fences was better.
Right.
So I don't know that this is going to do enough for me for her to be in the top five right now.
I'm going to say there's a lot going on for her character. There's versatility in here. It's pretty darn good. I don't know if it's in my top five either. Like, it's not like a slam dunk.
Right,
so obvious.
Exactly.
She's been better before.
Which is,
like,
again, what we probably thought we were going to get, to be honest.
Yeah, in the trailers, they're showcasing some Oscar reel scenes. And those were Oscar reel scenes in here. They're very polished. Like, I mean, the way he handles those scenes, McQueen, it didn't feel like A Star Is Born where they're just cut out for an Oscar reel. Okay, by the way, this is easy, editable. And put these in later on. I mean, she has some scenes that are really worked in with flashbacks and whatnot that I wasn't expecting. And then, of course, you know, there is the one scene that kind of is from the trailer that I got. So maybe I'm half right. But she's very good in this. Best Supporting Actress, Elizabeth Debicki, also in the Major Threats category on Feinberg. 20th on award circuit. 3 out of 29 experts have her up for Best Supporting Actress on Gold Derby, Michael.
I thought the performances overall were very well done. I think if I had to pick a favorite, it's probably her.
Okay.
I really did like what she did, and she had to be very vulnerable and turn into this, like, this caterpillar turning into this tough, independent butterfly. And her and Viola Davis's character kind of, like, swap attributes at certain points, and one became weak, the other became strong. So I thought she was very, very well played out, and I really like her as a performer as well, so...
To me, a lot of these characters are very similar. They all hit rock bottom when they become widows, but they're all uniquely geared in the same way where they're all going to be willing to commit this level of a crime
I feel like that's the script's problem, though, less than the performances.
Yeah, there's a lot. Remember the scene in Three Billboards, my worst scene in Three Billboards? I was just upset with it because she just so happened to say that when this would happen next, or basically when that would happen next. And I was just like, the coincidence of that drove me insane and made me so angry. And I've probably rewatched that movie 6 or 7 times since then. It's on HBO now. And it just aggravated the hell out of me. And this movie, there's a lot of coincidences throughout that are coincidences kind of in how these characters are similar, but also coincidences in plot that are aggravating.
Yeah, as far as a motivational incident for these four women to come together, it was lacking. I thought it was lacking.
Well, I mean, in terms of storytelling principles, Hitchcock said it, have a coincidence early on, but if you get have them later, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And typically, and obviously if you had them at the, have them at the very end, it's a deus ex machina. It's something forbidden.
Exactly.
That only Charlie Kaufman can do when he's making fun of them. So there's a lot of that happening here, I unfortunately. And everybody's, I mean, I get it because it's a, as a metaphor it works. Because femininity is done, right? They're done with chauvinism. They're done with being, you know, like I just saw an RBG. Get your boot off my neck.
Right.
They're done with that. And I get it as a metaphor. It's just as something that explains away in the story. You have to suspend your disbelief to function as an audience member in a story. And when that doesn't happen, you're just kind of like,
It's like treated like a light switch. It's either on or off.
Right.
There's no building up. There's no hill you got to climb over. There's no summit you have to
We work
cascade.
So hard for the realism.
Yeah.
We're working hard. Like you, there's a summit. There's a cascade.
Right.
There's all these things. As an audience member, we're trying to stay with this movie on, and then they continue to draw attention to the elevated dialogue being so elevated and aggravating. And, of course, to these characters having so much in common, even though on the surface they have their differences, and it's all right. These are surface differences, but they're all ready to steal
immediately
and commit all these felonies at this stage in their lives. And that's just a inherent problem, and that's one of the basic problems. We're gonna unfold a bunch of the smaller ones down the line.
It could have even been explained away better if they had more practice time, or we saw them actually like trying and failing.
Practice time. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm a coach. I didn't like the practice time montages in this one. I didn't need a Rocky montage, but I needed something more than one very short scene.
I'm there too. Like show them failing. They have to fail. They're amateurs. They are not bank robbers. They are not criminals.
Yeah, it didn't make a ton of sense either. Yeah, and this is where most of our problems align. Best adapted screenplay. Gillian Flynn, as good as she is, and she is ninth on award circuit. She is 10 out of 28 experts on Gold Derby wanting her to get an adapted screenplay in their top fives, Michael.
We don't
think this is close.
I love Gillian Flynn. Yeah. I think she's done phenomenal work. She's been attached to some movies and some properties that have left a very indelible mark on me over the last couple of years alone. Gone Girl, I'm on record saying how much that affected me and how I view Rosamund Pike, but... No, not for this, and she'll do better in other ones. But no, I adapted screenplay, especially for how big that category is going to have. There, I will be not only surprised but probably bewildered and a little offended if I see that she gets the cut here.
I really liked some scenes in this movie, and I remember
enough to merit an Oscar.
Yeah, but where I'm at with her is that like, okay, I recognize this is a Gillian Flynn scene, right?
Right.
This is a Gillian, and I'm happy about that, and it really flows well, and it's got all kinds of things working on texturally, subtextually, and I'm with it. And then there's other stuff where it feels like they just gotta yada yada me, or they gotta get the formula down, or they gotta just. I mean, they're just other scenes that aren't working, Michael. And I'm just high and low on the script, and I don't think that. You know, I think composition should matter for adapted screenplay because you're being given a lot of the scenes in general. Correct?
I agree.
So if you're not the, you know, the architect.
How high is the degree of difficulty to what you're pulling off?
If you're not the overall, and if you're not a great engineer or great architect and in the planning stage, getting that right, getting the overall right, then that's not really, I mean, I get it sometimes.
And if you sacrifice vision for signature. You know, like you said, you could tell they're Gillian Flynn scenes. That's great, but I don't think it helped the narrative.
Right. So it's signature to mix our metaphors. I was going the engineer architect, but signature.
I'm not smart enough.
Essentially, basically, the blueprint.
Just be better.
This metaphor has failed. It has failed miserably. It is my chief failure in terms of metaphors on this podcast. I tried, my father's an engineer, structural one, and I failed my father in this scene, much like a mulligan in this movie. How about that name, by the way? I just recognized the irony in that.
God.
We did not cut. We did not stop recording. I just wanted to tell all you folks.
It's just hate in my heart.
Cinematography, Michael.
I liked
something
the
that you did like.
This. I very much did like what was being done with the camera. I thought the camera was basically a character telling its own story, separate from what was happening on screen. A couple times, the opening scene, the camera work was amazing. One of the scenes involving Daniel Kaluuya, I really enjoyed what the camera was doing. I can see how this, for me, if you're going to pick a category, I think this or editing probably is where it's going to
shine.
And
it's the choice of POV. It's the choice of lens, which is so fascinating throughout this movie, and where basically what angles they're using and whose perspective they're going through and focusing on. That again, showy decisions.
Yeah. Absolutely.
By the director and I guess the DP here. Cinematography, it's sixth on award circuit right now. Only 2 out of 27 experts have it up there on Gold Derby, though. So there's a little bit of a disconnect between award circuit and Gold Derby.
I'm getting the sense, and I obviously don't know to back this up with, but I'm getting the sense that the Gold Derby experts were equally as unimpressed thus far.
Because
they seem, they seem to have been down in numbers compared to the other sites that were reviewing one and two. Some of the categories we would think they would be partial to, because Steve McQueen's being an Academy favorite, Viola Davis an Academy favorite, that they're kind of lower than we would expect. That's at least how I'm reading it. I don't know, obviously, for sure.
They were even lower a couple months ago and a couple weeks ago.
Everything gets a bump when it comes out.
It did get a little bit of a bump, and it's on more people's radars at this moment. Film editing, 7th on award circuit, 17 out of 28 on Gold Derby.
I love the editing, too. Cinematography and editing is where I would say this could make noise.
But this is not like a Baby Driver edit job. Again, I talked about the pacing. This is not a crazy action movie.
No, it's not.
This is an episode of, you know, however much you like it, either Boss, the Kelsey Grammer Frazier politics show on Stars. It's somewhere between Boss or The Wire. It's somewhere in between that. The Wire is a slow-paced show.
Oh, very. Absolutely. I think people forget that when they go back to rewatch it.
And this is of that pacing. Like, it picks up in its certain moments. It gets momentum at certain moments. There's suspense. And then there's... I'll talk about it in spoilers, what else gives it some momentum. But for the most part, this is... The middle of this movie is very slow.
Yeah, I don't disagree with your assessment there. I just think that as far as... For editing, for me, I feel like it had a tougher job because there were some sections that weren't flushed out enough, but it still told a coherent or relatively coherent through line.
Right.
I don't think it went above and beyond. I don't expect it to actually finish the day with editing, just because I think there is such an equation between editing and Best Picture, and I don't think this is a Best Picture nominee, so I think it's just going to fall by the wayside.
There's a lot of flashbacks in this movie, and they sync those up with the regular plot, at least the pacing of it fairly well.
And you could even cut together the action scenes that were there, the heist scenes that were there, were shot incredibly well, and they did flow incredibly well. There was a decent amount of action that was happening in them, and you were able to follow it cleanly. I would say the two categories, one is cinematography for me. If I had to pick a second, it would be editing. I just don't think it'll finish. I don't think it'll finish in either one, to be honest.
I don't see the editing at the end of the day, but it's very strong. But to finish up with production values here, Mike, and really all our reviews in the non-spoiler section, sound mixing, sound editing, 14th and 26th on award circuit. This original score I thought was solid,
Hans
but it's
Zimmer.
Very, very, very sad. Very, very dramatic.
Appropriate.
But yeah, it works. And it's not what I expected. I expected to more of a rousing score.
Yeah, you sound like you were just more wanted to be more upbeat all around, or at least more intense, a more rock and roll type.
This movie had me biting my nails through the finale. I was into it in its final act. I like the story in general, just the overall structure of it. I do. And I won't lie about that. I liked some of the performances like you did. I think some of the production values have a puncher's chance. I'm not going to say you have to watch this movie, but it's definitely not like if you're thinking Best Picture, top movies of the year, I don't see that for me at all. Like,
I'm just
going to
start sobbing silently.
It's not
over
my
here.
Top 15.
No, I am 1,000% in agreement. If you're going into this to see a Best Picture contender or Dark Horse or something you can get behind on Oscar Sunday, I think you might want to look elsewhere. Maybe Vice is your movie. I don't think this one is.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. We could be surprised. Look, it's got the critic scores to hold up.
Sure.
It's going to make some money. It may not make all its money back. It may not finish in the black. But right now, I would say we're probably in the minority with this assessment because the numbers seem to be fairly high. Right? Isn't that fair to say? Like, critically, especially. I know fresh just means that it's not rotten or it means that it's worth watching. But still, that's 90-something percent of critics saying that it's out of 200.
The Metascores,
Metascores,
the grades,
absurd.
That's what's
very
high.
So,
and I'm probably not going to agree with that. I think
we're against the grain here. I think as far as that goes, and that those numbers do suggest that it is an Oscar-worthy type film. As far as watching it, just be careful. It's weird to say that this is what we said in our Overlord review, but be careful with your expectations. for this one, I think is an important message. And with that,
the tables have turned.
Yeah. I wish there was Nazi zombies in this. Let's dance. Spoilers ahead.
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
This is the spoiler section for the Oscar Sprint profile of the movie Widows, brought to you by Mike, and Oscar. If you have not seen the movie yet, if you do not want to hear about what happens in the movie, what the twists and turns are, be sure to stop here, go back, listen to the first half, go check out the movie, and then come back and hit play. If you have seen the movie already, if you're interested to hear our takes, or if we've just hyped up enough, I don't know how we would have hyped up enough in that first half, but if we did hype up enough of what you want to hear about the twists and turns of the second one, if you're interested to hear without seeing the movie, if you don't care, this is where you want to be. It's all spoilers all the times for the Oscar Sprint profile of the movie Widows from Mike, and Oscar. All twists and turns here on out. Mike, can I just say before we get started here?
Yeah.
I can't remember being more let down by a movie in the past, I think, 18 months.
18 months.
It's been a while since I was so excited to see something.
I've so guarded myself for this because this has happened to me many times.
I have such a good predictor's touch and I could just sense.
Yeah, you're good at that. You can sense.
I have a good sense of what is going to be at least a movie I like, what is going to be a dark horse contender. I was so sure about this and I was just so wrong. And I feel so
bad. I don't
so
think you're
bad.
As wrong as you feel
well,
now.
You're
I think
an idiot.
We're taking a page out of our friends at Feelin' Film, their podcast. We like those guys.
Yes.
And they kind of take movies from basically an emotional level in many ways. And you are overcome at this moment.
I won't argue with that. And again, this is a biased point of view for me.
I am tipping my hat to certain structural things. But I'm also so... just guard. I am the divorcee of the movie industry. I'm living.
We're at the bar. You've been single for 10 years now. Yeah. My wife just left me.
I'm comfortable being lonely and being by myself. Right. And this metaphor is getting far too personal.
It's sad.
And it's true.
As our metaphors tend to.
And basically, I'm used to it. I'm hardened. Yeah. My heart has been hardened for this.
Yeah.
And I was ready.
I don't even have words, man.
Things weren't jiving. Well, let's kind of go through the plot here. We're going to use Wikipedia.
It all started when I was 8.
We're going to go through Wikipedia's plot summary, talk about kind of paragraph by paragraph. Henry Rawlings is a renowned thief. That's Liam Neeson's. When he and his partners Carlos Floric and Jimmy are killed during a botched robbery, hence the title, his grieving wife Veronica Viola Davis is threatened by crime boss Jamal Manning from Atlanta, Brian Tyree Henry there. The man Harry and his partners rob $2 million from the Mannings here. So Manning needs this money to finance his electoral campaign for alderman of a Southside precinct where he is running against Jack Mulligan, who is Colin Farrell, son of incumbent Tom Mulligan, who is Tom Hagen, who is...
you think that's his name now, Robert Duvall?
Robert Duvall, thank you.
You came up
much.
With Tom Hagen way easily, more easily than you did with Robert
I
Duvall.
I am Italian. I've seen The Godfather many times. So that is the setup. It's a dual setup because we think we're just getting heist. And we're not. We're also getting political diatribes from
and
the
that's
Mulligans.
Kind of an early tip off of where this starts going awry.
Yes.
This movie tries so hard to touch on so many different relevant and culturally relevant topics, political divisiveness and political corruption, racism. It tries to hit on gender, sexism.
Right.
And it's like, it just doesn't go deep enough into any
There's
one area.
There's an episode of Boss or House of Cards or something like that smushed into this movie. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no question. I did not expect that. And of course, Boss and House of Cards is written better. Bo Willimon and company. Like, this is just like, Colin Farrell spitting expositional dialogue that is just so, I mean, it made me feel like the scenes from Batman Begins, which was and The Dark Knight. Yeah. And what held those two movies back from Best Picture conversations was just the over the top punch you in the face.
Yeah, but
this
least...
politics and corruption is bad. This politics and corruption is good. And there's no gray areas or what?
But at least in those movies, you have a literal superhero who is like the vestige of all that is good in the world.
You're comfortable forgiving its literalness.
This one, it's a movie of anti-heroes where people have faults. They do. But there's no, like, you end up rooting for Colin Farrell in the scene, and he is just a bad person.
I don't need Colin Farrell on a soapbox
for
20 minutes of this movie.
As the moral compass of the movie, where he's just underhandedly power hungry.
And they're robbing the moral compass of the movie. And for that matter, Brian Tyree Henry is spitting some of the same kind of lines. They don't give him as much.
But he's unabashedly one, at least.
He's one note, yeah. You're
right, he wants to be the bad guy, and he's very power hungry in a different way. Colin Farrell's like the old power hungry, where he believes that it's a family is basically royalty. That's basically, he was a Trump runoff essentially. That the name carries so much weight.
Now, both characters have charm to them, by the way.
Sure.
Like, and both actors
like every
are
politician,
they're going off. I mean, here, they're doing a nice job, I thought, trying to elevate this dialogue. But this political dialogue is an anchor that will hold this movie down, in my opinion, much like it did for The Dark Knight, unfortunately.
Script problems, yep.
Veronica discovers Harry's notebook, which contains a detailed plan of his next heist, and decides to carry out this plan to get Jamal's money back. Now, this didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time. She had a very wealthy-looking apartment. She had a driver, a wealthy car. Like, she couldn't liquidate, like Brian Tyree Henry said, and come up with close to the money? I mean, it didn't make sense to me. She ends up saying later on that she doesn't own any of it.
Yeah, I think the idea was that these women, well, no, Michelle Rodriguez wasn't, but at least Viola Davis was like so financially dependent on what Liam Neeson did, and that's why she was so willing to turn a blind eye to his business, because it kept her in a nice house and kept her in nice clothes, but because she had to turn a blind eye, she really didn't know anything about the finances of the situation.
Look,
though she had money to give away to the other women at a drop of a hat.
Here's something for you. This is a stereotype, but you're very afraid right now, but I'm just talking about teachers' unions. Those folks aren't necessarily ethically compromising, correct? I mean, they are known for being staunch supporters of all of their fellow teachers.
Right.
I think that's a good stereotype. Yeah. So I'm just surprised that she is someone so morally, you know, cemented in terms of her profession, and she's married to a career criminal of 30 years.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Maybe she's not been teaching good lessons.
Maybe she's the enforcer of the teachers union. I mean,
she's
I get it.
She just stands behind during the meetings and pounds her fist into her hand.
To me, this is another one of those principal problems that I'm just like, nah. Because I didn't know what she was doing as her profession. I just knew she wasn't a career criminal like Liam Neeson from the trailers. But when I consider, like, we both work in education. You know, you have family that are still in education. I don't picture a teachers union representative as someone who's just bending over backwards corrupt. Correct? And I don't...
Do you think Viola Davis is bending over backwards corrupt, though?
I think she is willing to a death later to do so.
Well, yeah, but that's when she's cornered. Her back's against the wall, too. You know, she's a very... I
just think there would be more of a practical approach. There wouldn't be, okay, we got
to
do
this
$2 million job.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Are you kidding me?
Well, she was motivated by getting the key from the driver.
She's having a nervous breakdown.
She had to go to the safety lockbox and find his notebook. It was kind of, the breadcrumbs were left for her to do this, I think. Which, if you take that angle on it, makes no sense for why Liam Neeson does what he does later on.
Yeah, it doesn't make... To me, her character doesn't make sense from the jump, is my biggest problem. I feel like the teachers' union thing is something to get us to like her.
If your thesis statement is that motivation is an issue in this movie, I agree.
People have problems with teachers' unions for being so stubborn as well, so I don't want to say it's
She's a leader. I mean, she's very direct. She's very clear. I think that happens in teachers' unions, too. You know, like, I think there's a multifaceted
I picture them as good guys, but then again, a lot of people don't. So maybe... that's something else. So maybe that's why she's in the teachers' union. I just answered my own goddamn question. All right, we have Veronica recruiting two other widows, Linda and Alice, to help carry out the robbery. She also offered the fourth widow, Amanda, but she doesn't show up at the initial meeting. Veronica later talks to Amanda. She knows she has a small baby, does not mention the heist at that scene. She gives these girls tasks. Alice buys the van and guns they will need, and they all kind of need each other to help carry out these tasks. Linda makes some progress towards building blueprints, but they still can't find out where this thing actually is. Alice is doing like this escort life, and she also meets Lucas Haas, who kind of tells her it's a safe room later on, this executive David, and it's very strange that they eventually identify the place as the Mulligan headquarters for their campaign. Coincidence, Mike?
Yeah. I thought that was a little too...
It's over-the-top nice. Coincidences, yeah. And it's just one after another after another. Like, we happen to have we're doing this politics thing, and they happen to be corrupt, and they happen to be corrupt, and they're at war with one another, and also the place we got to rob is the bad guy.
And the money is the money itself is all kickback money that he kept in his headquarters.
Right.
His
so campaign headquarters. Turns them uniquely into Robin Hoods, which they become at the end of the movie, which is kind of forced in.
If you are running for office, are you going to keep the money that you've exploited from your people in your campaign headquarters? You don't think maybe you'd want to keep it somewhere else?
A little bit of an issue, but yeah. All right, so we'll keep moving. When Veronica's chauffeur, Bash, is murdered by the Mannings, this was a tense scene. I'm glad they didn't show this scene.
I am too, and I think it added more to Kaluuya's character.
That's classy.
That he's sitting down, watching the game, turning up the volume so he doesn't hear the guy getting beat to death. That was kind of nice. Kaluuya was played intimidating very well.
Usually, movies like this, they make their money with muscle flex scenes that get you afraid or get your bloodlust up for the bad guy. By showing you what the bad guy does to good guys or friends of the good guys.
We get enough of that, too. Like, early in the movie, it's Kaluuya.
You're saying it's a purposely ignored opportunity to show them beating the shit out of this character.
Right, and my response to that is that in scenes prior, Kaluuya is interrogating these two guys, and he's right in their face, making them rap for him, and then when they're done rapping, he shoots one right in the head, and then fires the other one into his back as he was running away.
Later on, he's doing some sadistic shit to that paralyzed guy.
Right.
At the bowling alley.
Yeah, I think there's enough there.
There's enough there. I'm just saying, usually, you know, you escalate that character, and then you show what he does to the worst of the worst before you kill him at the end.
Maybe the message is that the camera is paying off more when it's on Daniel Kaluuya than when it is on other
people. Yeah, that could be a two. He's very good in this. So Bash was going to be the driver. They find Belle, who happens to be the babysitter, Cynthia Erivo.
Happens to be the first babysitter they call.
Who's totally willing to put her entire life at risk for these people she's met, and she's totally willing to fight again. You know, metaphorically, no motivation. It works. Women are fed up. We get it.
Yeah, that's fine. And that's a great message. But if that's your message, go with it.
But you have to work it into the fabric of the story more clearly and make it make sense. It doesn't make sense. She is a hairdresser. She is
no motivation.
And she's, I get it. She's working hard, multiple jobs, babysitting, hairdressing, to provide for her daughter who's living with her mother. And I get it. We know that she has a sensitivity to the fact that the hairdressing shop is giving away money to this collector, whoever he is. We learn that he's one of Mulligan's guys.
Right. Mulligan has another scam where he's helping out minority women start their own businesses.
But he takes a healthy cut.
Getting a kickback from all of them on top of it for getting them started.
So it's just like this perfect circle of evil that needs to be thwarted by these anti-heroes who's so perfectly anti-heroic that they become perfectly heroic? How did that happen? Anyway, it bothers me that it fits together so well thematically. And this should have been a messier story.
What is her preface for joining this group? What is her, like, she's literally asked by
Michelle
Rodriguez.
There's not enough motivation.
Yeah, can you drive?
This is the melodrama.
You can drive? You're into this heist. And she's like, yeah, I am. That's it. That's there's no explanation. There's no inciting incident. There's nothing for her to join this other than she was there. And we saw one scene where she was running to catch the bus. So we know she's athletic.
We get no reason for her to turn to this level of a life of crime. And she doesn't know these girls other than the Michelle Rodriguez character.
Like, that's the thing. They're treating these women getting together like, they're these feminist anti-heroes, but they're treating them getting together with the same seriousness as like, we have to stop my ex-boyfriend's wedding. You know, like just suggestions and that it's something to do. And they're living on the wild side a little bit.
I wanted more of a procedural. I mean, this movie pays off goods with the reversals. And it's essentially a plot that works on revelation. And I thought I was going to get action payoffs, but the payoffs are revelation payoffs. So you can't believe Liam Neeson's still alive. You can't believe that the son was killed by cops. You can't believe that the son was killed in the first place. You escalate the revelations in a story that works on flashback. That's screenwriting principle 101. So when you start with flashbacks, you end with the heaviest flashback, which becomes the that he's still alive, Carrie Coon, which we misconstrued in the middle here as I'm getting to that.
I think all those flashbacks did more harm than good, and I think there's so they presented so many questions and dangling story articles that just don't ever get resolved or referred to.
I figured if they matched it with a procedural, then I would have liked it better. Like you have to do that, in my opinion, because I like some of the big twists in this. I like how the twist. They surprised me.
A lot of the twists to me just felt like twists for twists' sake.
Well, that's what it becomes when it's not grounded in movie reality, in your world building. It's not there. And
give me an example of a procedural that you're talking about then.
I want to know exactly.
Like LA Confidential types thing?
Let's go to another Gillian Flynn property. Gone Girl. They painstakingly give you so many details of the crime plot.
Right.
That's the whole movie. They weave it in. And Gillian Flynn is a master at this. So you have to go no further than Gillian Flynn stories.
So you would have liked to see more about why they got together, their motivations for getting together?
We've both been screaming that. And that didn't work. But I also want to see how they're going to do this job as total amateurs. And
I agree 1,000%, man. There wasn't nearly enough
there. It's a coincidence that her boyfriend is a building developer. It's a coincidence that they have Cynthia Harivo. Right? It's a coincidence. All these are coincidences. You can't work on coincidences as a fucking plot device, enabler.
What you call too many coincidences, that's what I mean by lack of motivation. Yeah. There's no groundwork laid for any of these things happening.
So Veronica visits the Mulligan house, and she's also coincidentally there during the biggest showdown between Father Mulligan, Robert Duvall, and Son Mulligan, Colin Farrell. Right outside.
Lest you thought Robert Duvall might be a good guy at any point.
He's not. And very strangely, like, young Mulligan is like defending good things, good moral things in that scene.
And listen.
Scumbag.
Listen, I know Steve McQueen did 12 Years a Slave. And we just got over the Viggo Mortensen catastrophe here.
Right.
The incident. Can we stop with the freaking white person using the N-word so that he's a bad guy? There's way other creative ways and more fulfilling ways to prove that somebody is an antagonist.
I've listened to some people talk about Viggo Mortensen and that, and it's still... They made some good arguments that the word's still used by a lot of bad people. So that
it
was
is. Yeah, there's no argument there. I agree.
So there's truth in the fact of the portrayal that you know. So I don't know. I'm at a point now where I'm confused. I wish.
But are those bad people going to see these movies anyway?
I agree.
Like, do you need to message that home?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's used once. And
somebody seeing this type of movie is going to know that those bad people exist anyway, right?
True. Yeah, I'm with you. So the group after. Veronica basically canvasses the place, figures that the safe is behind a painting of Chicago, and eventually they are preparing for this final night by lugging a bag of weight around. That's the whole preparations
that's
the Rocky practice. Montage. That's the practice.
They're
that's
filling
it.
Up Tupperware with dirt and saying it's the same size and weight as $2 million
you
cash.
Dramatize that. They were having a serious discussion during that.
Right.
I get that. I like that scene. But I figure, like, what are they doing with this Tupperware?
I was wondering the same thing, and it's like, it's just for the payoff of doing wind sprints, essentially.
Not even.
Which we see one of.
We saw, two. She goes up and back with a heavier bag and a not-so-heavy bag. She could carry a heavy bag. Great.
All right, you made it back twice. We're good to go.
We can rob
this. Let's roll.
Yeah, what the fuck?
You guys fired two bullets.
Absurdity. Absurdity.
You went to the gun range once.
They went to a gun range once, and they carry a heavy bag. Are you kidding me?
I agree. It's terribly written. And not to mention the fact that when Veronica does case the place, they get down to see what's there. They were shown all these security cameras, and nothing is done about them. We're just like, there's a security camera around every corner.
They don't,
okay, good.
They don't clear the house.
There's nothing done.
They're not professionals. This is really dumb.
Which is fine, right? Which is totally fine if you do this. Okay, you have the amateurs making all these mistakes.
And I like
But have there be some payoff to the mistake?
Well, here's the thing. I like the finale a little bit because it does go wrong. But I wish it didn't go wrong to the point where they coincidentally kill Robert Duvall, who's the guy we want most dead in this entire movie. Right. So coincidentally, like, again,
there's no poetic justice.
It goes so wrong, but it goes so wrong in their favor.
Right.
Now, twice we have Daniel Kaluuya jumping them and stealing the money. They chase him down. I like that. They chase him down.
And I like that they didn't just let him get away. They answer him. They come back and they find a different car and hit
that, him. Yeah, that worked for me too. And then the same thing happens again to her character. So we have it happen to the group. We have it happen to the individual character. That's good screenwriting. That's good story structure there. I really like that. And it pays off well and it flows really well and it builds really well to have the individual climax of your protagonist after kind of your group climax with I'm using the wrong terms here. They're getting slightly sexual, but it definitely works thematically and structurally in terms of cinematic storytelling. I just don't like that the fact that scene was a little ridiculous, the final Liam Neeson scene.
Well, we're here now.
And predictable.
We're at the Liam Neeson scene. So here's the crux of the plot and the big reveal that we're supposed to have. One big reveal is that Liam Neeson and Viola Davis's
marriage. They didn't even write this into the Wikipedia plot line because it's so hard. Again, the narrative doesn't flow that well.
It's not handled.
There
well.
It is.
Liam Neeson and Viola Davis had a son whose life was taken from him because in a police shooting. One of the classic things we see on the news all the time, those terrible, the black guy driving a car reaching for his phone and he gets shot by a cop.
Tragic. And they made it seem believable. They made that scene
but it's referred to twice in the movie, which was I had a big problem with. But anyway, so Liam Neeson, we thought is dead. The second big reveal is that because their marriage was on the rocks, Liam Neeson was actually having an affair with the Amanda character, who was the fourth woman who wasn't involved in this plot and has been alive this whole time, is working in concert with Son Mulligan Jr., Colin Farrell's character, to rob Brian Tyree Henry's mob of the $2 million. It's going to help Farrell's campaign, and Liam Neeson just wants the money to start a new life with his new happy white family, as Viola Davis calls it. So there is a confrontation in the garage at the end of this, where Liam Neeson goes to Viola Davis and says, I need that money, Veronica. I need to start a new life. After Veronica was the one who just did all the dirty work to get the money there.
Now, kudos to Liam Neeson for not getting any plastic surgery or any work done. Because we saw 100,000 wrinkles in his face. And I like this. I think people should just age. You know,
I agree.
Just my opinion, and I'm an asshole maybe
like
for some people wanting to feel better about themselves by having plastic surgery. But whatever. I just think that it makes me feel good to just be yourself and truly your physical self by just having all the wrinkles in
his face. Barbara, cancel my nose job!
75,000 wrinkles in his face, screaming at Viola Davis later. We all know she's going to have a gun on him
when
he turns around.
Very predictable. And that's the biggest sin. You're going to have all these things that don't barely make sense as it is. And you get to the end and you have just a predictable twist ending, quote unquote twist ending.
Well, I like the fact that he was still alive. I was surprised. I
hated it.
I was surprised by that.
It would have been more of a surprise if they didn't show all the flashbacks of him still being there.
The reason he's turning on his wife of this many years is because their life wasn't as ideal and as loving as we thought.
Show
I like
me more
that reversal.
Don't just show me the one argument they have and then the kid getting killed and that's it. Like there's
Well, but I think those, again, structurally, you can imagine all the reverberations of what chaos that would rain on your life and your marriage and your relationship. And that's what kind of my mind went there in terms of the flashbacks we get, and we don't get a ton of them. We get two, like you said.
But if that was enough to cause this much strife in this marriage, to go through this, and to be ready to do, you learn so much.
You want
from your
that
husband.
Story more than you want this story.
Yeah, why not? Or at least tell me why. Like, show me the marriage falling apart more. There
probably
wasn't
works
really,
in a novel.
Like, there were so many scenes and so many flashbacks and so many visions Viola Davis had of Liam Neeson holding her and touching her and falling, you know, having her head on his shoulders.
Oh, we
blah, blah,
started
blah.
Thinking they have an idealistic romance.
Right, exactly. So then you have one scene where conflict happens and that's it. And now you're shooting.
You got a couple, to be fair.
Ah, bullshit.
Couple in a row. But and they're hitting at big times in the structure. Again, I'm with you in the fact that it's just not enough. And yeah, I don't more. Like that. Like, it's even not enough for me to believe that he can just kill. Like, we don't understand his connection to Carrie
right.
Coon. We have to guess what
right.
it is. We guess that it's his baby. We guess that it's, you know, fine. We can guess those things. And
I still didn't even know it was his baby. Like, until Viola Davis at the end.
I mean, yeah.
It's your perfect little white family. I mean, there's so much. That, there's the scene where Michelle Rodriguez finally tracks down the architect and ends up making out with him on his couch. And then she says, I gotta go. I understand she's supposed to be overcome with grief and loneliness at that point because she just lost her husband. But it's so out of left field. It doesn't really fit the scene at all.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a very human moment that I hate myself for saying that because I've always made fun of critics for saying, well, it's very, you know, it's about the human condition, Mike, right. and breathing air on the planet Earth. And it's very good at that. It's very good at breathing air on the planet Earth. It's a human moment. It's kind of one of those moments you don't expect. I'm not against that scene. I dislike this movie for different reasons. If they executed the script, if they really executed it and if it was more detail oriented, I think they could have done it. I wonder if the novel works or not because they have more time to do so.
How
this
do you not dislike that scene? That makes no sense. You just railed on here about how coincidences you hate, and we have this architect whose wife just coincidentally died.
You're not wrong to say that it's a coincidence that they both.
And that's the only reason it's a human reaction because they both are suffering loss.
Yeah, and you're right to get mad at me for that because
good.
It is, again, another coincidence that they're there in the first place. But the reaction meant something to me. I understood that. And then it made sense that she would just leave and bail after that and totally just abandoned that thread there. In Mysteries, it's whatever, it's a red herring.
There was so little explanation of the power structure, too, of those women. They just default to Viola Davis being their leader. Elizabeth Debicki is making an offhand comment, my boss is a dick at the auction sale.
Yeah, those characters, to me, have this group mentality, and that's fine. And they're characterized on the surface. I don't get enough. Like, there really needs to be more conflict between them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they default to Viola Davis being the leader because
one slap
no,
is not enough.
Right.
And one yelling at her to do more is not enough when nobody does anything.
Yeah, I really, there was so much of this that was just mishandled to me.
All right, let's all do more. Let's carry that bag 20 feet and do it faster. Now we're ready to commit this, you know, crime that will go away,
the tiger
go away for 60 years. And yeah.
The 25-second montage of training they did.
Cynthia Erivo, man. It was the best thing they ever did.
And then cut it off because that's how long the scene lasted with their training.
I just realized Cynthia Erivo is the best move they made throughout the movie. And we got nothing on her. That we didn't get enough, let's say. And she's the one who actually drives a car to hit Kaluuya, right?
I think so. Where did they get the car from, by the way?
Well, the van. They had to, maybe they built. No, Kaluuya got the van.
Yeah, I didn't understand where they got the car from.
They got a car.
But I guess, I like that because it was at least, there's so many issues. The cultural issues of the day, just stuffing them in and having them feel like afterthoughts, the lack of motivation as to why anyone was doing any of these things, the lack of character incidents and conflict, and the lack of shock I felt from these big twists and reveals. It just all fell so flat to me. The predictability at the end of it, I hated. I'm so let down by it, which really sucks because I was really looking forward to this.
I didn't love it either.
I feel like a lot of people are going to... Yeah, you seem to be higher on it than I was, and you still have major issues with it.
I still have major issues, and we've ad nauseum at this point, so it's probably a place to wrap up. In terms of final grades, Michael, I think I'm around like a B-, probably. You know, I know you got mad at me the last time. B- is very low for me.
It is. That's low. I'm a 75C.
Yeah.
That's low for low, me, low, too. Low. I do want to highlight just before we go out, so it's not all bad. It's entertaining. You get your money's worth as long as you went with the right expectations. The camera, really, I did like some of the poetic justice with the camera. Spinning around Daniel Kaluuya as he's looking at the rapper. The camera at the very beginning, that scene.
Oh, where the exposition dump I hated with Colin Farrell and his wife in the backseat.
Right.
But they focused on the driver's reaction.
Exactly. I thought that was really unique. African-American driver. And you're driving from the projects of this city to the literally ivory-covered.
These two spoiled white pieces of shit who are ruining this neighborhood, being driven around by an African-American driver who's just scowling.
They're two worlds apart, financially and income-drivenly and just culturally. The projects where they're driving from to Colin Farrell's house where they're driving to, but they're so close to each other in proximity that all they are is a conversation away for the car to get from one place to another. I thought that was very well done.
I hated the conversation, though. The dialogue itself was garbage.
Yeah. The very opening scene, the opening heist where Liam Neeson is trying to get away with the money, mm-hmm. how the camera keeps panning from the driver to outside the open doors which have been blasted off of the van, and we see the car crashes and the police chase taken through from the perspective of looking behind the driver's seat, I thought was really innovative. Again, the camera spinning around Kaluuya as the guy's rapping in his face before Kaluuya pulls the gun out and kills him. I'm very, very high in the cinematography and some of the tricks done with the cinematography here. So I wanted just to end on a happy note. I didn't want to go saying how I think this movie has no use. I think it does. I think it is entertaining. You could find value in it. 75 is probably harsh. I'll probably be closer to a C+ after rewatch or B- after rewatch if I ever do give this another chance. But my disappointment cannot be overlooked.
Well, I think it's fitting that you end this in terms of the movie criticism, because we went full movie critic on you folks today. And
except that I was terribly biased. Aside from the objectivity, we went full movie critic on you.
No, I mean, we didn't like the movie. We're honest with you folks.
We are.
And you're honest, and I'm honest. I could have went piggybacked on you to pat myself on the back here. I could have piggybacked on
you. No, you did.
And went even more negative, or we could have went bad cop, worse cop. Was that like the other guys, Wahlberg and Will Ferrell?
Yeah, just angry person and more angry person. And
throwing stuff on the table.
I thought you were the bad
Will
cop.
Ferrell script. I thought I was bad cop, worse cop. I forget what that fuck that was. But that movie was more plausible than this one at times.
Ending this episode on a butchered joke like that, we have to explain everything, is probably perfect.
In my head, that joke was going better.
We want to know what you guys thought of this movie, as always, and any other that we've done the Oscar Sprint profiles of. We could reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available pretty much everywhere that you listen to podcasts, and podcasts are available. Michael, any final words of wisdom here for this episode?
You know, you learn from screenplays and stories when they don't work as much as you learn from them when they do work. And I learned a lot watching this movie here today, so I'm very grateful for that fact.
You have to know when to hold them. You gotta know when to fold them. We'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.